I'm Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. And there are many reasons why achieving police reform is so challenging in the United States. One of those is the role of police unions. In some cases, these unions have pushed back against reforms meant to increase transparency. In other cases, they've established collective bargaining agreements that make it difficult to hold officers accountable. And some have even increased their power by forming political action committees. Melissa Segura recently reported on the power of police unions. She's a reporter for BuzzFeed News and a fellow at the think tank New America, and she joins us now. Melissa, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about the role that police unions play in terms of their representation of their officers and public officials.
What we have is a group of officers who rightly have access to the same worker protections that many unionized workers have. Police unions, however, are a little distinct from other worker unions that we've seen in that they have incredible political clout and also tremendous political fundraising capabilities, in which have given them much more leverage than we would see perhaps from a service cleaners or a maintenance workers union. And so what that has meant is that when they sit down with city officials to bargain for their various worker contracts, for their collective bargaining agreements, they've been able to extract particularly strong protections for the police force. Now, what that has meant in the case of what my reporting shows is that those protections have actually extended into what many will call not just worker protections, but sort of obfuscation, sort of ways to obscure transparency and accountability in many ways that have left officers like the one we saw on tape, Officer Derek Chauvin, without any sort of public accountability or transparency, despite the amount of power that they've been invested with in our communities.
So let's talk a little bit, because there's a lot of police unions, a lot of police departments, a lot of different negotiations happening around tables across the country between those unions and public officials. Let's talk a little bit about what you saw in Minneapolis specifically. What did the police department union negotiate for that you're suggesting may have kept this officer from, or his transgressions from, coming to light prior to George Floyd?
The Minneapolis Police Federation, which is the union representing officers like Derek Chauvin, have been particularly powerful. Their contract includes provisions that, for example, don't allow clear public access to disciplinary records. Now, Minneapolis is better in the sense that you're able to see a listing of those particular accused transgressions, but you're not able to see the substance of many of those. And so what that means in particular is that we as the public don't have any access substantively to what's happening.
Melissa, how old are many of the police unions? Are they all, 100 years old, or are many of them newer unions that are being formed right now?
We have over 18,000 different policing entities across the country, and so that means that we have sort of an alphabet soup of all of these different unions, and labor laws also factor in very complex ways in different parts of the country. So we're really seeing from major metropolitans, mid-20th century, you've got strong entrenched unions, and now we're seeing actually a push. And the irony is that a lot of this push comes from the right that is historically anti-union, with the exception of police.
Melissa, there have been a lot of questions, particularly here in New York City, as we've seen Mayor Bill de Blasio, try to tackle growing outrage among New Yorkers towards what they say is, police brutality from the NYPD and sort of excessive force by the NYPD, and sort of, how de Blasio is really trying to toe the line. A lot of folks would say that's because of the police unions here. Why do police unions have so much power, particularly over public officials?
What we're seeing is a combination sort of the abstract and of the concrete. And what I mean by that is, in an abstract way, we see the built-in narrative that so many of us have heard for so long about the heroism of police. And so what that means is that a lot of times in the public perception, you have this incredible loyalty to the police and to what they need. I mean, obviously, they have an incredibly difficult job. No one necessarily argues with that. And what that means is that, you know, no political official wants to say, you know, I've rejected what the police say that they need to be able to do their jobs. That's almost political suicide, just from an abstract perspective. But then when you marry that with the fact that many of these unions have set up political PACs, they are incredible political fundraisers as well, that have dumped thousands upon thousands of dollars into various campaigns. We've seen this specifically, for example, in San Francisco, where a public defender who came in on a reformer's agenda was seeking office, and the police unions across the state of California had combined to pour in $700,000 against his campaign. Now, that's almost as much money as the candidate himself had raised to come to office. Again, they're happening on a local level, and they're also happening on a national level, where they have essentially raised a ton of money, and many, many, particularly on the local level, they're afraid of not being able to match that political clout, both in terms of its symbolic nature and really in terms of its financial clout. It's just almost political suicide for many of those local officials.
I'm also curious a little bit about the presence of white supremacy within police unions. Is there any proof of that? And if so, how widespread is it, Melissa?
It's very difficult to say. Most of what we've seen has been anecdotal. For example, in Chicago recently, there have been the White Boys, which is recognized as a white supremacy group, and others like it showing up at police union events in that city. There is currently an investigation into white supremacy groups infiltrating parts of the Chicago Police Department, just for example. We've also seen this in another sort of more subtle way, and that's the concern that a lot of affinity groups who represent Black and Brown officers are sort of breaking off and forming their own unions that are meant in some ways, from what I've seen per the research, to not only protect themselves from a union from a labor perspective, but most particularly from the predominantly white unions that represent their own departments. And so I think that when you have those collective voices, though many of them are minorities within their own police departments, having to rise up and say, hey, we need our own collective voice to be able to even have a seat at our own table for our own union, that should raise some questions.
Melissa Segura is a reporter for BuzzFeed News and a fellow at the think tank New America. Melissa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.